transportation, and we're continuing on with the public hearing, and we have with us today Representative Tootie Smith from Malala. Representative Smith, would you like to come forward, please, and offer your testimony, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Tootie Smith, House District 28, Malala, Oregon. I've made some copies of my testimony and a little newspaper article. As you may be aware or not aware, Malala has experienced a great deal of growth in the last decade. The city of Malala in the outlying area has grown 57%. 1 mile from the downtown city limits, we have an intersection where two state highways cross. It's now a four-way stop. There are highways 213 and 211.
Conserving energy.
Conserving energy.
Never criticize the Public Utility Commission.
That's right. I won't.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Please proceed.
That's okay. I'll just wait till we all calm down. Yes, a large amount of growth. The city of Malala has expanded its urban growth boundaries to account for some of the growth, not only in our residential housing areas, but in our commercial areas as well. We've had the addition of a new strip mall in Malala with Safeway, a lot of other stores, a McDonald's, a Bi-Mart, various gas stations to accommodate the added growth. Also, Highway 211 travels from Oregon City through this section of Malala to Silverton. Silverton is the other part of my district which has also experienced a large amount of growth. And a lot of that growth we feel will be even accentuated with the addition of the Oregon Garden, and now Frank Lloyd Wright House has offered a new attraction to bring in even more people to the Oregon Garden, which I believe it will. One of the main thoroughfares to the Oregon Garden is either I-5 or this particular highway, 211. While our city planners have been very busy working with the Department of Transportation people to try to get a traffic light, you know, we've run into some barriers, of course. And I'm here to try to ask the committee for, you know, a specific allocation for a traffic light at this intersection. We have bids from anywhere from $250,000 to $450,000. And the reason why it's at $450,000, because the intersection is not perfectly square. It intersects at an angle of these two state highways. We're going to have to move some power poles and probably acquire a small section of land and do some excavating work. So it's just not a matter of installing a traffic light. Currently, the left-hand turn lane heading west, you situate yourself right into the middle of oncoming traffic. And the department has tried to fix it with the what's available at the time, but it just really isn't good enough. In January, we experienced a death of one of our beloved school teachers out in the area. She was stopped waiting for traffic in front of her, and she was rear-ended and killed upon impact. That just goes to testament of exactly what type of traffic situation we're experiencing. House District 28 does not have a traffic light, period.
This is going to be your first one, then?
This will be our first red, green, yellow. We have blinking reds. We don't have red, green, and yellow. And because of, as Portland tightens their urban growth boundaries and the outlying cities tighten their urban growth boundaries, it forces growth on our little cities like Silverton, Malala, and any other place you can think of to expand our urban growth boundaries. People like to come to Malala because it's a high quality of life, lower priced homes, things, a good place to raise your kids, and that whole thing. My city officials have been very diligent on working with the Department of Transportation. At this point, locally, we have been able to raise and allocate for this traffic light $75,000. That comes from $20,000 from the city of Malala. The city of Malala is very strapped for money because with our declining timber industry and our sawmills, we don't have a lot of money left for infrastructure. The Grandmore development that put in the strip mall would pay $35,000, and I believe we have another $20,000 from private sources. So we are able to put some money forward to this for this.
You think that total would be a grand total of how much?
$75,000. And I think some of people are working with OTOT to determine exactly what the cost of this would be. And I've requested 450. It may be on the high side, but that's what I've been told. So I'm asking for money today.
I think there's a representative upstairs who has a sign on his door. Show me the revenue source. Thank you very much, Representative Smith. Are there questions?
Well, it's great when they try to raise some money locally to do it.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Representative Ringel is recognized.
Just a question. I assume this is Clackamas County, right? Or is Malala and Marion?
Yes. It's Clackamas County, yes.
Excuse
me, Representative Ringel. Thank you, Boy Scouts, for coming today. It's a pleasure to have you. Welcome back anytime. Glad you could come to the Capitol today. And Cub Scouts, too, I guess. Thank you. Excuse me, Representative Ringel. I was going to have Representative Ringel report or recite the Scout Law.
I can do that, and you do the Scout Oath.
Okay.
I just want to ask you whether a certain piece of legislation might be helpful to you and perhaps surprise the committee at the same time. In Washington County, we've had some frustration in terms of not getting responsive projects from ODOT. And one of my solutions is to require that there be a matching fund so that if a locality comes up with a certain amount of money for a project on a state road, then ODOT will match it. And in your case, it sounds like you've managed to raise $75,000, $75,000, and that gets you a good way there. And if you had a guarantee match from ODOT, then perhaps Clackamas County might come up with an extra chunk of money, and you would have the guarantee of getting this done. Does that sound like a reasonable solution to you?
I would work with anything that would resolve this matter, that most definitely. I know that Oregon in general has experienced a lot of growth. Reiterate again, this is the intersection of two state highways, and the fact that the city should be made to bear the brunt of this expense, I tend to disagree with a little bit, but we're willing to work. And maybe if we had ODOT to say, yeah, we'll fund half of this or something, maybe we could go out then and raise more funding through some of the larger businesses like the Safeway or the McDonald's. Our privately owned businesses in Malala, however, are very strapped because they're very small. I mean, our largest employer is a school district. So you can understand where our economic base is coming from.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that bill is going to be coming out of transportation probably through this sub. But for me, it's to respond to exactly circumstances like this where a community desperately needs work done on a state road. It's somehow lost in the big ODOT bureaucracy.
That's kind of what we feel like we've been a little bit lost, and I just wanted to bring it to the attention of the committee. I realize that you got people aren't dripping in money to be handed out right and left. I do. I am aware of that. But this is a situation that really needs to be looked at if we could.
Senator Farnell.
I just wondered if you discussed with ODOT at all about roundabouts. We're using roundabouts in Central Oregon. We have been the fastest growing area, and I'm the only senator that has to give away 26,000 people, and I kind of hate to give them away.
Roundabouts, I'm not aware of that.
Oh, they're used extensively in Europe. And we have quite a few of them in busy intersections in Central Oregon, and they work wonderfully well. I won't say much cheaper, because if you've got a heavy traffic volume on two highways coming together like that, you have to have a pretty big roundabout. That's where you just blend in and go around and get off.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, it keeps traffic moving, doesn't bring traffic to a halt.
They do that in some sections of Portland, don't they, in the communities? I don't know.
Anyway, you might explore that with them as well.
Okay.
But I like your
that
idea of raising money locally.
Coming in
that
different
point.
Directions like that,
well,
a roundabout works best when you've got angles.
Yeah, when you have an angle.
We do have an angle, and maybe this could be a fix until an allotment comes down the road that we could get a traffic light in, because I understand we need to be on part of the STIP plan and that whole process.
Let's go around about and see if that's a possibility.
Okay.
I'm not an engineer.
I'm not either. This is all foreign to me, but I want to thank you for listening to me today.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And Representative Smith had given me the her memo of question earlier. I had provided that to Mike Marsh, the Executive Deputy Director, and Mr. Marsh has a response, and I don't know whether Mr. Marsh wants to get that in the record today.
Mr. Chairman, I can certainly get it in the record, but if you'd like to have us respond to the representative on the record, I'm happy to do that.
I don't know that it's necessary. We have a written response to it, and if as long as you're satisfied, Representative Smith, that the Department of Transportation is working with you, I appreciate
that.
Yes,
they are.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for hearing me.
You bet. Appreciate you being here.
You bet.
And the response to Representative Smith's letter from Mr. Marsh is at your desk as well. Well, we're continuing to wait for a full quorum. We'll go ahead and ask the clerk to go ahead and push calls, see if we can get a quorum, and we'll hear the... We'll plan to just go ahead and continue on with the Department of Transportation until 2 o'clock, at which time we'll come back to House Bill 5017, the Oregon State Fair. We'll go into work session at that time. So we'll continue forward then with Senate Bill 5545. Mr. Marsh?
We don't have it.
Mr. Chair, then I think we'll continue on the answers to the questions from the last hearing. The first one relates to the rail program. I'll go ahead and start with that, and then go to Lorna Young, who will handle the questions relating to DMV. As members recall, that question related to providing passenger rail rate analysis and looked at options of maybe increasing the rates or the fee from as much as $1 or $2 per rider. As you can tell from the executive summary, which I hope you have in front of you, with the salmon-colored page on the top for the 21st of March, Amtrak does the market and rate analysis on these situations, and it is proprietary information, so we cannot get it from them in order to conduct an analysis of our own. We have looked at the issue of whether the fee could be added or not, and the response back has been that the fees would go to them if they were increased. It would not come to the state. We're looking at an option of potentially doing a surcharge or something similar just to make sure we've covered all the options here. But our perception is at this point that there isn't an alternative for the state to recoup the monies from that fee structure. But we will check out that one last option about a fee of some type that is added on as a surcharge to the fee that Amtrak charges. Also, we're concerned about the idea of charging more for that train as compared to the other trains, which would result in obviously citizens wanting to use the lower fare trains. Mr. Chair, that's the answer on the first question. We have a little more detail in the information beyond the summary. Unless there's questions on that, I'll go to Lorna for the DMV-related questions.
And we'll ask Senator, if she has further questions, she probably just go ahead and take those up with you, Mr. Marsh, and the rail division. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Lorna Young, Deputy Director for ODOT for the DMV. Second question referred to the $66,000 of debt service included in the DMV budget. That is for an energy loan that the DMV received when we redid our Lana Avenue building. That should be paid off in 2009. The COPs issued for the DMV headquarter remodel are $1.6 million, which will be paid off in November of 2019. Regarding the question that Representative Smith raised about security access for vehicles for a secondary lender, I had an opportunity to meet with Representative Smith to clarify that issue, and we'll be researching it and bringing the results back to this committee as it may relate to our project for electronic names and titles as a potential solution. Fourth question was a breakdown of cost of the motor voter program. That's a program mandated by federal statute where all jurisdictional DMVs must assist in voter registration processes. And it's approximately $119,000 for personal services and $34,000 for forms, et cetera, to accomplish the purposes of that program, which is upon either you send out voter registration cards with address changes, renewal requests, and, of course, when you come get your license in the DMV offices, we give you an opportunity to register as a voter, and we pass all that information off to the local, to the counties to get your vote.
There is a form charge to the Department of Motor Vehicles.
No, those are the forms that we print. We print forms and send them out in the mail. to individuals who want to voter register forms that allow them to register as voters.
And what are the personal services of $119,000?
That's the time in that it takes in the field offices to register voters, as well as any time in headquarters. Since this is a generally funded program, we have to make sure it covers all the costs. So it's incremental time across the whole system to handle the voter registration process.
Do we actually register them, or do we just hand them the voter registration?
We hand them the forms. We mail the forms out. We handle them. We bundle them up. We send them off to the county. We don't actually register them. The counties register them.
So 66,000 registration cards monthly. Is that what we're doing here?
Correct. That's how many we're registering monthly.
Okay.
For question number five, you have your list included of all the 60 DMV field offices. And for question number six, we've also appended the cost for reopening all eight of the field offices that have been recently closed. I might note there that reopening a field office doesn't mean you necessarily can go back to the site that you were in previously. We need to go through the state process for soliciting sites. Question number seven was in regards to the one of our proposed information technology projects, and that is to develop a process whereby we can transfer information about liens electronically between ourselves and lien holders. That is a service that is offered in other states, and our concept is that we would do that through a third-party provider. And this answer provides the breakdown of the costs for that project. Question number eight had to do with phone lines necessary to open up an office in Lapine. What would be the associated cost? We need to have a T1 line in order to be able to have real-time contact with the computers and the central services in order to do transactions, and that would be approximately $2,400 to set the lines in, depending upon three workstations. You also wanted a list of our habitual offender offenses, both minor and major, and that list is appended. There aren't parking infractions involved. These are all moving violations of some sort, major and minor, and quite a long list.
I want to just go back to the Lapine for just a moment, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
The actual high-speed communication line already exists.
Correct.
Is it being used in any state offices currently in Lapine?
Mr. Chair, there's a T1 line going into the highway maintenance shop. So our cost would be to connect about $661 to connect it to the existing line, $300 to $400 per drop, and then depending upon how many stations, we're looking at possibility about $2,400.
Okay, so that's just basically the setup.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. Then the habitual, the number of offenses on that habitual offenders, infractions and offenses of the non-severe, the minor infractions was how many?
20.
And what was it, three major?
Three majors.
Okay. And you get Coke and fries with that, I think.
Once their license is revoked, it's for a certain period of time, and then there's a reinstatement process. It depends upon, simply need to retake all of the tests after the end of your revocation period, and then you're relicensed.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll take question 11. It related to the rental agencies and the passenger vehicles. We looked both in 1999 and in 2001 at the rates of, in essence, four entities, ODOT, the DAS Motor Pool, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, which we have the state has a price agreement on, and a look at over-the-counter rates that we could get on an ongoing rate as a fleet. And in all of those cases, in essence, the intermediate and compact cars available through the private sector range from 80 to a little over 90 cents per mile, whereas the rates that were available for DAS Motor Pool and ODOT ranged from 30 to 40 cents per mile. part of the analysis in the detail gets into the fact that there are the analysis done in the past showed that we can provide a more competitive rate, and some of the reasons for that include the fact that we don't have to pay property tax, that we have an ability as a fleet to manage the fleet as a whole, and some of the other reasons about the details of why we can do it in a more competitive way. But I'm happy to go into more detail about both this study as well as one that was done a few years ago that went into a little more detail than just our sampling of rates that we have for you today.
For fiscal year 98-99?
For the older one and then the more recent one done in March of 2001 under that.
Okay. And indication at that time that that ODOT in all cases was providing cheaper than the motor pool, and that is the case today with everything except for a small pickup, at which point DAS is a little less expensive?
Slightly, Mr. Chair.
At about a 30% savings on compact sedan, fully a third reduced price there, and let's see, about 20% reduced on an intermediate sedan. Could we just go ahead and have DAS contract with ODOT to provide the motor pool?
Mr. Chair, I think we're trying to have those that have capacity deal with the state as a whole, and DAS has capacity because they have a broader range of vehicles. We have about 500 in the light fleet that we have. We have much more than that in the heavy fleet when you look at backhoes and other heavy equipment items. So what I'm trying to say tactfully is I think their capacity in DAS is broader than ours, and it would be quite a jump up for us to try to supply it to the rest of the state.
There's no economy of scale in the DAS motor pool then?
Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that for now. I think there is an economy of scale, but they have a broader range of vehicles and capacity they have to keep up for agencies.
At that point, would the ODOT consider using the small pickups from the DAS motor pool?
Mr. Chair, we see that as a rate that shifts back and forth, and if we can find that it's an ongoing rate that results in a significant difference, we would. The reason we initially did this study was our expectation that we would contract with DAS for the provision of the services. But upon finding the information, we didn't find the backing to make the move for us. So we thought we better handle it on our own, especially since it's much more efficient for us to have the large fleet, and it's not that much more of an addition to handle some of the smaller pickups and passenger vehicles that we currently work with, because we do have the mechanics that have to work with the larger vehicles already.
Connell is recognized. You.
I don't. I'm just.
I could hear the wheels grinding.
Sitting here grinding my wheels. You can hear.
Yes. No. That's fine. I just. It's. I guess after looking at the numbers with the Department of Motor, Department of Administrative Services versus the Department of ODOT. Your budget numbers on the vehicle costs. Maybe we better call the gas budget back and take another strong look at what's happening there. So thank you very much. Let's see, that takes care of 11, is that right?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Moving on to number 12, which was the question regarding using of video hearings, and I apologize for my ignorance. It turns out that ODOT pioneered the use of video hearings, and we're using them to the extent that we can now. Started a project 2 or 3 years ago where we've held at least 118 hearings this year using the video system, and we've essentially maxed out the video capacity for the state thus far. Most of our hearings are on the west side, and so we're using wherever the hearing system is set up, we're making ourselves available. Question number 13 had to do with what are the elements of how do we calculate the productivity of our transactions per hour, and attachment F gives you the breakdown of that. Essentially, we take all of the FTE, convert those to hours worked by removing vacation, sick leave, training time, and then divide that into the total number of transactions to deliver the transactions per hour calculation for each year. And then finally, the question had to do with what are our plans for expanding Oregon Women's Correctional Center call center. Currently, we are essentially maxed out in that facility with 40 workstations. We're covering 44 of our 60 offices. Most of the ones that are not covered are in Eastern Oregon or a couple on the coast. When we move to Coffee Creek facility next biennium, depending upon how smooth that transition goes, we plan to try and pick up the rest of the offices, depending upon whether or not we can find the resources within our budget to do that. And then they do represent a small volume of additional calls that will help service delivery in eastern Oregon as well. And that concludes the responses to the questions that were asked at the last time.
Thank you very much. I had followed up with the with Ms. Young's relative to the number of transactions in a year. That's nearly three transactions for every man, woman, and child in the state of Oregon relative to the. And I'm told now that, that also includes telephone calls as well. It's an expensive telephone call. It doesn't get much done at $5.82 if they're just calling in for the time of day or something like that.
Mr. Chair, of course, recognize that this is an average cost across a lot of different kinds of transactions,
yes.
And many of them are more expensive than $5. Many of them are much cheaper than
much
$5.
Cheaper and much more extensive than some of them. Thank you very much, Ms. Young. Are there further questions relative to this that are not fully detailed? I would like to ask legislative fiscal to help coordinate, if we could, to find out the fleet costs comparison, because that is a growing problem we've got. Because if the balance of the state is paying 50% more for their automobiles usage short of a small pickup than what ODOT is able to provide it for their own use, then we do have some difficulty somewhere. And I would like to zero in on that if we could, because this our general government is responsible for the Department of Motor Vehicle, or the Department of Administrative Services and their motor vehicle pool. So,
have you ever seen the nice car wash out there in the 6 Bay fueling station, et cetera?
We'll zero in on the whole program. Thank you, Senator Carno. Yes, Representative Smith is recognized.
My wheels are grinding as well, and I was wondering if we could have staff look into the possibility of let me actually step back. I understand that the Department of Correction is providing a role with the Department of Motor Vehicles in handling customer calls. And some of the calls are, it's a high level of professionalism. And in my other Ways and Means subcommittee I serve on, the Department of Justice has an internal staff that looks at collecting delinquent accounts, and they're looking at additional staffing needs. And I wonder if there's an opportunity for DOC, Department of Corrections, to also provide that role for other agencies within the state besides Division of Motor Vehicles. And so I'm thinking out loud, and I know I'm slowing up this committee, but I think it's a question worth asking and seeing if there's other roles that we could provide for prisoner training, I guess.
We've got a captive audience in the facility, and the answer to question number 14 indicates that the 40 workstations presently are maxed out, but at some point in time, once you get the next level of service available, I think it would be very appropriate to follow up in any way that you could.
I guess what I'm thinking is, and I'm really not trying to slow the group up, but with the Department of Revenue, they make an initial phone call on the collection of delinquent tax accounts, and they're telling us that takes a tremendous amount of staff time to make those calls, and I wonder if a partnership could be made similar to what the DMV has with the Department of Corrections between the Department of Revenue and the Department of Corrections. And so I'm thinking out loud, and granted that serves another committee, but I still think it's worth it.
Appreciate your input.
Senator Klein. I would just recommend to Representative Smith that as you go through this process, that may be one of the things you want to put on whatever interim committee you're serving on, because that's something they could look at in the interim. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Carnell. Okay, we appreciate the input and the response, and we were with the Department Overview continuing on DMV. And Ms. Youngs, and I believe you were, I'm sorry, it goes back to last week.
Yes, and where I left off was on page 389 of the Ways and Means, of the governor's recommended budget. I had shifted from our Ways and Means presentation to the governor's recommended budget narrative to have the more detailed discussion of our proposed packages. So page 389 of the governor's recommended budget. And I had concluded last time with the discussion of the restoration of staff, and would like to proceed with the discussion of facilities and equipment, and then move into information technology and our driver safety initiative. We're proposing $170,000 to relocate our call center from up to Wilsonville. We'll need to put in a new phone switch because the current phone switch will not switch or transfer phones the distance from Wilsonville down to Salem, so we need to upgrade our phone switch. We'll also need to install new T1 lines between Wilsonville and Salem, and then we've got some additional money for staff travel and of course, moving up there. Then we have a package, our proposal for approximately $750,000 for remodeling and relocation of existing field offices. And I refer you to a handout that I gave you when I was up last week, which is a more detailed breakdown, one-page handout of the $750,000.
What's the front of it look like?
So, I had three handouts. One pager titled Oregon Department of Transportation, 2001 Means, Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Transportation.
I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, let alone.
If you'd like, I'll skip over that and come back to it after
Please.
You've had copies made. The final piece under that is for $250,000, which we would like to help begin our replacement schedule for personal computers. We're looking at buying approximately 250 computers. We're on about a five-year replacement schedule and would like to get started next biennium so that we don't end up having to replace them all in one biennium. Our information systems proposal of $3.7 million is divided up among projects which would improve the internal workings of DMV as well as projects that would enhance services to the customers. Our first project is to establish credit debit cards in the field and in headquarters. Currently, we are not capable of taking credit cards. We are taking cash or checks, and in many cases, we're turning people back because they aren't aware of that. So it would be an efficiency for us as well as an efficiency for our customers to take credit cards. The second item is Internet commerce, $1.7 million, which would allow us to open the Internet door to transactions. Of course, this is dependent upon the establishment of the state portal through the Department of Administrative Services. We're currently looking at feasibility studies of such items as vehicle registration, lookups for information, ordering custom plates, drive test scheduling, change of address, etc. The third project is electronic liens and titles. That follows on the heels of a project we're currently working on, which would allow vehicle dealers to provide plates and stickers at the time of purchase. Much of the infrastructure that is needed to build an electronic lien and title program will be in place once we get this done. This particular project, as I said, would allow us to change electronically information between ourselves and lien holders about titles so that every time you want to change a title, you don't have to go or you pay off a title. The information can be transferred electronically instead of having the bank find where they filed it and send it in to get that title changed into your name.
Does that address the issue that Representative Smith addressed earlier last week, I think, relative to the concerns of banks and lending companies with the size of these interstate agencies, interstate companies?
Mr. Chair, it may very well be that it will, and I wanted to research that to make sure before I brought that answer back that that would help facilitate that.
I think that was one of the questions, too, that you
yes,
wanted
I wanted to,
get directly
to and I clarified that yet yesterday with Representative Smith exactly what his concern was, so we'll be bringing that back to
Thank
the committee.
You very much.
Driver test scheduling system. Currently, we have an automated system. It is old. It's not what had the capacity we'd like to see, so we'd like to upgrade that. This would allow us more flexibility to make sure that we are maximizing the use of that system, help us deal with cancellations, et cetera. The next one is a system infrastructure project. One of our major systems, the driver status, which is essentially where we look up what your driving record is in assembler language, a 35-year-old language. We'd like to bring it up to code, so to speak. We've been working program by program to convert, and so this is another project where we'd like to convert that to a supported language, as well as to upgrade the screens that our employees use into a format that is much more easy to do, essentially fill in the blank, requires much less training, much less knowledge. Not quite to the point where we aren't like at McDonald's where you just hit the hamburger icon, but certainly much better than we are today. And finally, $500,000 for our driver license replacement system. Our contract with Polaroid is up in 2000. We'll need to renew that. And we're proposing to use $500,000 to migrate the database from the Polaroid supported system onto our own database and to help pay for additional costs of setup to get that going. Most of the costs are going to be borne per license. Currently, we're paying $1.16 per license to support the system to Polaroid to develop it. We would have similar per license charges in the future.
Ask if you're doing digitize that at the same time and keep extra copies for the state and for our records?
Mr. Chair, those photos now are currently digitized, and yes, they are on record so that when you go in, we should, in another 2 or 3 years, have everyone's photo digitized. Of course, the renewal cycle takes a while, but all of the solid white plastic cards are digital photo licenses, and that's all on record.
Representative Patridge is recognized.
Thank you. Why are we moving away from the Polaroid system?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, our contract is up. We're not necessarily moving away. Polaroid is one of the major, in fact, there's only two in the U.S.
And so you're going to move your database from the Polaroid system to another database system.
We're proposing to, rather than have Polaroid manage the database, that we put the database on the mainframe server and manage our own database. We experienced a loss of data with Polaroid, and we'd like to maintain our own database to make sure that we have the security of our own system.
Follow-up, Representative Patridge.
So what's the continuing cost of what you're going to do versus having Polaroid manage your data?
We're going to be...
you're obviously going to need more FTE and some other things on an ongoing basis if you're going to manage it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, that's part of the analysis that we're putting forward on the project. We have the capacity on the mainframe. The additional cost for it's going to be paid for either whether we manage it or Polaroid manages it. And so our proposal is to manage it ourselves, but we'll be evaluating the cost differential between manage it ourselves and managing are having a third party manage it. This is security issues that are also very important to us as well.
You mentioned that Polaroid had lost part of our data, and there is a security problem.
Mr. Chair, there was a upgrade of their system. The result was that there was a corruption in the upgrade. They ended up losing photos. We haven't been able to recover all of those. We have some concerns about maintaining the security of the data. If we manage it ourselves, we're more comfortable that we'll be able to retain and make sure that we have that data. There's always a risk when a third party manages your data.
So this is a $500,000 protection in effect as we migrate from Polaroid to our own system?
The $500,000 is essentially When we installed the system the last time, when we developed a photo system, you could either, one of the ways to finance it is to pay for everything up front, or pay for a portion of it up front and have most of it financed on a per license basis. We've established essentially a $500,000 threshold of cost that we would like to pay up front to help defray future costs in the license costs, as well as to allow us the flexibility to migrate it from a third-party supported database to our own supported database. The photo licenses are the only database supported by a third party. All other data is supported by DMV at ODOT, and we have a little bit of concern about having third-party support our database given the experience that we recently had.
While we're talking about those costs, let me just move back up to the top of 390 relative to the credit and debit cards. $577,000 to move to the credit debit card, where we now only accept cash. Do you have the discount for the credit card incorporated somewhere in your expenses as well?
Mr. Chair, yes, we would have to cover the charges.
You have those accounted for in the overhead costs.
We would cover that in our base budget.
That's
part of our operating cost.
$577,000.
No, that's part of the $577,000 is to develop the system and install it. The ongoing maintenance cost we would cover in within our base budget under service and supply.
Yeah, credit debit card arrangement. I know the state has worked out something with it through the treasurer of the state where we pay a 1.9% fee, which. You know, I'm looking at the fact that when I was in business, we had negotiated ours down to 1.5%. Somebody needs to sharpen up their pencil anyway. But, we're not talking about the millions and millions of dollars that the state's going through either. But why do we pay $577,000 to have this debit credit card moved arrangement out to our field offices? It would seem to me that debit and credit card companies would be, knowing that they're going to pick up a 1.9% rate, would be stumbling over themselves to install this system free of charge for DMV.
Mr. Chair, what we're looking at here is the cost to essentially develop the programming that would allow us to transfer that money electronically through our point of sale system.
Can you check with the treasurer of the state to see if they... if banks aren't providing this service already through our current banking arrangement?
I'd be happy to research that, sir.
Well, that should be something I'd take a look at, because for the volume, I think in another budget we looked at the amounts that we were paying just in credit card fees were over $2 million a year at the 1.9%. And, it doesn't take long for the credit card company to recoup $577,000 in a biennial capital outlay of that nature. So I would, and that is part of an IT project, so that's subject to review by the e-government. So I'm Representative Patridge is on that committee, so he recognizes, I think, the concern there.
Senator
Yee, yes, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon, Senator Yee.
We're both on three committees together.
And you really enjoy it, don't you? Thank you very much. Okay.
You're in good hands.
Yeah.
I just wish you success.
Rather not in good company. Okay. You're down to drivers, or problem drivers and safety.
I'd like to go back briefly to the discussion on the field office remodeling. You now have before you the list of proposed offices for remodeling or relocation. Primary issues driving remodel or relocation are the fact that the facilities are not large enough to meet the customer demand, or there's a desire on the part of the landlord for us to move, which is the case of Springfield. Northeast Portland and North Portland both outgrown the capacity from the standpoint of the volume of customers, and we'd like to relocate those. Springfield, we've been notified by the landlord that they're in the process of selling the facility and would like us to vacate, and we'll need to relocate. And then our Woodburn office has has vastly outgrown the population there, and that needs to be remodeled, although we'd like to stay in the current space. In addition, we have, if you will, ongoing projects to upgrade and remodel the offices, install ergonomic workstations, make changes that need to be made to any facility that you rent over a period of time. And that essentially encompasses the proposed package for $750,000 investment in existing office infrastructure. Our final package then is problem driver and driver safety, an area of the agency that we feel needs much more attention. Much of our focus in the last two or three years have been on getting our transaction volumes handled in an expeditious fashion, of restoring customer confidence, keeping our wait times down and our transaction turnaround times down. Now we'd like to turn our attention to build up the infrastructure of the driver safety, one of the fundamental missions of the DMV. We have a proposal for about $1.8 million centered primarily around the recommendations of the older driver study. That study was commissioned by the legislature during the last session to do an analysis of ways in which we could improve our program for older drivers. The result of that study essentially said that it wasn't age, it was impairment that needed to be handled much better, and that DMV needed to do a better job of screening for impairment as well as managing older drivers. And we believe that that program will have a great deal of benefit not only for older drivers but for the DMV in general. So let me just go through the list quickly here. The first one is the teen driver. One of the issues that was addressed legislatively last session, and the provisional driver bill was put in place, we're putting more restriction on teen drivers. One of the things that the DMV was able to provide with the assistance of some support from driver safety was a tuning up manual that allowed parents to help teach their children how to drive. We'd like to continue to offer that manual. It's we've had a great deal of good reception for it. People have felt it very useful. And we'd also like to evaluate the effectiveness of the teen driver program, and that's what that first line item is for. The second line item is for, as I said, to implement recommendations of the older driver study. We're proposing a two-phase approach. The first phase, next biennium, approximately $1 million. To do a series of things. First of all, to pilot a screening tool called Useful Field of View, which does a better job than just a straight vision test to determine your cognitive ability, your ability to manage conflicting information. It's essentially a video screen divided up into like a pie with various lights that come on in different sectors, and it measures your ability to tell what sector the light is in with an increasing speed of incoming information. And at some certain points, you can't do it anymore, and that sort of is a determination of your ability to handle information that comes into you while you drive. So we want to pilot that in a few field offices to see whether or not this tool actually is operable outside of a clinical setting, which is where it has been primarily up to now. We would like to do a better job of screening drivers for gross impairment, teaching our staff how to do that evaluation as well as working with law enforcement. We anticipate the additional time it would take to work with individuals as they come in the door would add approximately 4 FTE across the system, and so that is part of what we're requesting is 4 additional transportation representatives to help implement a much better job of screening drivers as they first come in. We would like to expand our outreach and education to the community, because one of the recommendations of this study was that it was not the DMV's problem alone, but it was a community-wide problem. If you were going to reduce, you needed a lot of assistance for individuals if you were going to reduce their ability to drive. So we want to work with many of the communities that worked with us in developing the bill or the recommendations to provide more education and outreach, and so we're asking for an outreach coordinator for that as well as the other parts of the bill. One of the recommendations from the committee was to increase the number or the kinds of conditions for which there was mandatory reporting, and to also increase the number or the types of professionals that were required to report. We are proposing that be done by rule, and there is a bill in effect to do that. And we anticipate that that should expand the number of cases that we have of individuals who need counseling. So we've asked for two additional counselors to provide that. So there are in, as well as one additional counselor to deal with a more rapid turnaround. So altogether, there are eight positions that are tied up with this bill that would have better screening tools, more outreach, more conditions, and a much more comprehensive approach. Then we would propose to come back next biennium with additional requests depending upon the outcome of our efforts this biennium if this package is funded. The third item on the list is problem drivers. A driver improvement or driver counseling program essentially is a program set up to provide individual consultation to problem drivers to determine what kind of additional sanctions or additional restrictions do we need to place on their driving ability in order to get them back on the, if you will, straight and narrow. Because of additional workload that we've had in that program, dealing not only with teen drivers but older drivers, we have not been able to keep pace with essentially the adult problem driver, and in the last year have had to eliminate counseling from for adult problem drivers because we haven't been able to get to them in a timely fashion. So we're asking for two additional driver counselors to restore our counseling program to adult problem drivers. We're asking for additional funding for testing.
Senator Yee?
I have a question on the problem drivers.
I thought we weren't going to mention my family. Keep them out of it. Please.
I think you said you already have six counselors and you wanted to add two. Why do you think six counselors is not enough?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, currently the six counselors are pretty much occupied with the mandatory counseling that is part of the teen driver program, as well as doing medical re-exams for individuals who have whose older drivers or people who are impaired for which a medical exam is needed. Currently, we have a backlog of cases. We had a six-month backlog before we dropped the adult problem drivers out of the program and are now down to about 1 or 2 months between the time in which we need to bring a person in and when the time they actually get seen. So we have very many more cases than we actually have staff to do that. So based on our caseload calculations, the addition of two staff would allow us to restore the adult drivers and be able to see them in a timely fashion.
Thank you, Senator. You want to follow up?
So are these on limited duration? Because if they're effective, then you can reduce the caseload, and you don't need them anymore once the caseload is reduced.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we seem to have a steady group of individuals coming in. In other words, you're not seeing the same person over and over again, but new people come into the program as a result of driving their driving behavior. So we haven't seen necessarily a great reduction in the caseloads yet. But certainly if the caseloads are reduced, then we would reduce the personnel. But this is not a temporary backlog. We've simply dropped out a whole segment of the population and are no longer offering driving counseling to them because we can't get to them in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm. So, another question.
Final follow-up.
We
just have another budget that we need to consider, and we'll get back to this tomorrow. So, but go ahead.
Yes. So, how many people are on the backlog now, and how many will the counselors be able to take care of?
Mr. Chair, Senator D, I'd be happy to provide that information for you.
Mm-hmm. And then it costs $150,000 for each FTE.
There are some, in addition to the FTE, there is some funding in there for some additional education. Let me get the detail of that for you as well.
Thank you, Cindy. Excellent questions. Why don't we proceed? Thank you very much, Ms. Young. We're going to have to go ahead with our other budget at this point, or else I'm going to start losing a quorum here very shortly. So we'll pick back up on page 391 tomorrow, Wednesday. If we could, thank you very much. I'm sorry I have to see that, but I don't want to let the, we've held over this other budget at the state fair, so we'll now go ahead and close the public hearing portion on Senate Bill 5545 and open the work session on House Bill 5017, the Oregon State Fair. Ms. Lamont?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you appointed a work group to take a look at some issues related to the state fair. As a result of the activities of that work group, I have some proposed budget language in front of you, and then I have the standard recommendations related to the overall budget recommendations. In the interest of expediting this, I won't read the budget language unless someone wants me to. However, in item one, I would like to request that in the last sentence, we delete the word in and replace it with the word during.
You know the last sentence of which?
Item one.
Okay.
I think that clarifies that we are requesting that they make their progress report when they appear in front of the legislature next biennium in preparation for their 03-05 budget request.
What do you delete?
I deleted in and replaced during.
Oh, during. Okay.
It's operating costs out of the revenue generated during its 03-05 budget presentation.
Correct.
Thank you.
Items 2 and 3, the darker language represents recommended changes that members of the task force got to me on the original language.
And budget number 3, we're just noting that the task force has met and studied extensively in the interim, and we appreciate their recommendations that they have made, and that's part of what the task force, the ad hoc committee, has done as well, as met and discussed some of those issues.
Yes, and in addition, Mr. Chair, this relates to an ongoing community partnership
mm-hmm.
task force that, as I understand it, leadership has begun making appointments to. There's a budget report comment that again came out of the ad hoc work group, item number 4, relating to expectations of greater partnership between county fairs and the Oregon State Fair. I just wanted to caution that that only some of this is under the control of the State Fair. We need it on the record that we expect this partnership to occur, but the State Fair ought to be able to report back if it doesn't get the collaboration that it is looking for.
Can you talk?
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chair. Robin, can you tell us what type of collaboration are you specifically looking for?
The work group did not identify the specific type of collaboration. What we were looking for is for them to work together with innovative ideas. There were a number of issues that were floated in the work group. Representative Butler was talking about some sort of collaboration with dairy princesses and competition at the state fair with dairy princesses. I believe that Representative Johnson had some ideas about ways that issues could come from the state fair to the from the county fairs to the state fair in a competitive manner that would benefit both the county fair.
So it was kind of a brainstorming to bring up and let the best ideas percolate to the top.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I might just add by way of clarification that the genesis of that whole conversation was the fact that we heard quite a bit of testimony from county fairs talking about how the state fair is the pinnacle of the fair world and that it is held in such high value. I guess some of us were looking for some kind of demonstration between county fairs and the state fair that valued that tangibly valuated what was reported to us as an existing relationship. And we're looking for some level of collaboration that indicates that the county fairs are willing to step up and, other than say it's an important relationship, do something to memorialize the importance of that relationship. So specifically related to money.
Well, that's what I'm nervous about, coming from Eastern Oregon.
Well, I think everybody recognizes that the county fairs are under a certain amount of pressure themselves.
Right.
But if the value really exists that the county fairs testified to, there has to be some way to tangibly demonstrate that. They're part of the fair community, and I think what some of us are hoping is that that ideas at least will percolate in a way that shows some level of support, whether it's in volunteer activities, whether it's in folks from county fairs coming over and staffing donation stations at the state fair, some way to come back and report to the legislature that this relationship exists other than just in people's imagination.
I would just say that I hope that if there's meetings to bring this about, that we consider the distance that many county fair people, they have no money in their county fair funds as well, and the distance they must travel. Maybe if there's a county fair convention or meeting, the state fair could coordinate it with them so that all the meetings don't have to happen in Salem and all the meetings don't have to happen in January when we've got a foot of snow on the pass.
And no snow tires.
Oh, man, this is going to kill me.
Senator, you recognize?
Well, I'm very appreciative of the appointment of the work group because one of my concerns about the state fair is the state puts in about $3.9 million every biennium to support the revenue bond payment, the long-term bond payment, and the upkeep of the buildings. And I don't see too much local participation from the city and the county. But from the work group, I learned that the city and the county do contribute towards public works. They redesign roads for better traffic flow, and they provide service in law enforcement in helping with parking and in the spectators coming during those days. So I do see a lot of local contribution from the work group's information, because my county contributed $18 million in building their state, their county fairground. And I think Senator Plano's county contributed $30 million in their county fairgrounds. So the information I gather helps me to understand they do have local contribution.
Thank you, Senator Yee, for that astute observation. Representative Patridge?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the work that Senator Yee, yourself, and Representative Johnson have done. I'm less than enthusiastic, however, about this particular budget. I felt like last session we brought this up, and the task force that was appointed included only people from Salem who it was of benefit to release some money from the emergency board. And I am less than enthusiastic if the task force members who will continue to work on this are from Salem. I think that people from outside of Salem, their communities have contributed a lot to their particular fairgrounds. I don't think this community has contributed as much for the economic development, for the economic benefit that is received by the residents of Marion County and the city of Salem for the benefit of having the state fair here. And that has resulted in a dilapidation in the state fairgrounds and the continued maintenance of effort that we're going to have to put forward. I reluctantly will vote for this budget and support the leadership decisions that have been made, but I am less than enthusiastic about that, and I just want to send a clear message, and I will write a letter to leadership in regards to the fact that the people who should be involved in this should not just be from Marion County. They should be from other areas of the state who don't have that as a political perspective as well as a financial perspective. So that disturbs me, and I felt like we were rolled last session as a result of promises that were made during the session.
I appreciate you bringing that up, President Patridge, and I think that there is a concerted effort to make sure that the folks that are involved in this next interim are, number one, not the political types, and number two, from a good broad spectrum of across Oregon that will represent all of the interests, because when I see all of the task force members, with the exception of two, one from Milwaukee and one from Portland, it was most concerning to me, and we had those concerns, and I think expressed them last session. But then, two, we have folks here represented from Jackson County and Linn County and Deschutes County, where you have put the most money of any counties in the entire state into your particular operations. Tens of millions of dollars have been committed locally, and I trust that you'll be appropriately rewarded in your communities by the kinds of attractions that you'll be able to get, and that's part of what the collaborative effort is and should continue to be here, would be that we would bring forward a state fair that would be, as Representative Johnson in the case, the pinnacle of all of the collaborative work that's done, or the work that's done at the county level, and the dairy princesses and the rodeo queens and all of that should be all part of the county fairs, and then they should be part of the state fairs and help us to elevate the local county fairs into a statewide event of some magnitude here. So Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess as we're finishing sort of building the record from both the deliberations of this committee as well as some of the work that was done by the work group, I want to add a couple of other things. I think some appropriately tough questions have been asked by this committee, and that in no way that should reflect negatively on Katie or her team. Conversely, I think that we don't want to end up putting so much confidence in Katie that if she comes back with a report the next time and the report doesn't have all of the buildings, you know, shiny, bright apple new, you're not going to be able, I think, to fix everything in a very short period of time. And I hope that the record reflects that the reports aren't punitive, that the work group, as well as I think the committee, has a high degree of confidence in Katie and Ms. Cannon, sorry, that we want to have that reflect a partnership with you and the state fair community, and by the state fair community, in my view, that includes the county fairs, that we really do have an interest in your success, but that we, at least I'd like to have it made part of the record, that we know that when you come back in a very short period of time, everything won't be fixed. There probably won't be huge cash reserves. You won't have been able to do a huge amount on capital maintenance. Even though I think the expectation of the committee is that you come back and report best effort, it won't all be fixed. And I hope that that's reflected in the record so that undue criticism isn't leveled against Katie and her team for not being able to rebuild Rome in a day.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. I think the record does reflect that we have invested the $10.1 million in the capital infrastructure and the fairgrounds, and it continues in process. And with the current budget and with the projections that we have been looking at, we're assured that they will be maintained, like similar to what other state assets are presently maintained, and that the current LFO recommendations does provide adequate support to move the operational portion of the fair into some degree of self-sufficiency, but we'll continue to maintain, as Senator Yee has called up, we'll continue to maintain the debt service, and there will be a sinking fund that will have to be created out of the operations and in the future to go ahead and pay for the major maintenance on those particular facilities that we've got out there. And I, you know, that's not going to be decided today in its finality. Representative Ringo is recognizing.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple comments. I have found this budget presentation to be very interesting, and I always started from the standpoint of, well, what is the fair for? And there's lots of different suggestions. Some say it's to give folks in rural Oregon a place to go after the county fairs. Some say it's a place for urban folks to go to see where milk really comes from. One of the statements, the number one point, said that it's to market Oregon products. And I am still not satisfied that there is a cohesive vision as to what the state fair is for. Sure, it can be for a variety of things, but I see things that necessarily aren't that consistent. And then on top of that, I do find it troubling that the city of Salem, Marion County, really seem unwilling to meaningfully participate. And I appreciate Senator Yee's comments about, well, they do in some respects, they're providing law enforcement and some others, but I think compared to Mm-hmm. Exactly. But compared to other places, it's very minor. And, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering whether there's any way to send a stronger message that if there isn't specific financial participation, that members on this committee would recommend discontinuing further support of. I mean, frankly, that's how I feel. I think the new leadership is very strong and it bodes well for the future of the State Fair. Nevertheless, if there is continuing lack of participation from the local community, I am ready to pull the plug on this in view of doubts about the mission, in view of everything else. And I'm just wondering whether there's any way to state that in more specific language in the budget note. We do expect financial participation. Because frankly, if I am here next year and if there is no participation from the local government, I would support discontinuing the State Fair.
May I speak to that? Certainly, please. Budget note number 3
mm-hmm.
is a continuation of the activities that were undertaken during the last interim, the task force, the work of the consultants. It is envisioned as a partnership to address specifically those issues. The goal that certainly was articulated by the task force was community partnership, not simply government partnership, but I think even more importantly, the support of the business community and, for example, the Salem Visitors Convention and Visitors Association, which has made a commitment to work with the fair to identify ways to maximize the value to both the fair and to the business community. So it's my belief that that is what budget note number, that item number 3 is in fact dealing with, is that expectation of ongoing partnership.
Well, Mr. Chair,
thank you. Follow up for me,
Robin. I mean, Robin, I appreciate that very much, but when I read it says to continue the community collaboration. Now, maybe everybody in this room knows what we're really thinking. And maybe the thing for me to do is write a letter to Marion County or write a letter to Salem telling them that I, if I'm here next year, I'm going to want to know that they've put money into this. I think a more forceful budget note would be nice because I don't read that in here.
Thank you. Representative Patridge?
Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, last session I had a lot of the same concerns. I still have continued concerns. I mean, I proposed last session that we do a matching thing where we don't release some of the money to Marion County, the City of Salem, step up, put some money into
this
thing, and it releases money. I mean, I proposed that last session. I proposed a lot of, you know, we proposed unscheduling. I worked with Ms. Cannon last session. I think she did, you know, when she was here, not on this budget, but I mean, we worked with her through LFO and other things, and I appreciate the job she's done and the credibility she has, and I guess that's all I'm trying to count on this time is doing that. So I'm just sharing with you my frustration as well from last time.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. I serve just on 2 ways and means committees, and every day, all I do is look at budgets and hear the stories and the concerns and the issues. And I'll tell you what, that becomes troubling. It becomes concerning. But I've got to tell you, if there was one budget that I've looked at that I thought the state had an obligation to subsidize, it's our State Fair. The State Fair is a tool that brings folks together from around this great state, from the coast, from eastern Oregon, from urban Portland, to the local folks here in Salem, and it brings them together in one arena with one theme, with one week, really, to come together and to celebrate Oregon. It's a chance to look at agriculture. It's a chance to have fun. It's a chance to have good food. It's a chance to showcase our counties in the county fair booth. And when I look at the budgets that we're being asked to vote upon, when I'm asked to look upon making tough decisions, I've got to tell you, I'd rather see us subsidize a state fair that brings the state together more than I'd like to subsidize the Attorney General's office and increasing attorneys or subsidizing some other agencies that I could list. And so I see the concerns. On a daily basis in my other life, I work with struggling businesses in rural eastern Oregon trying to get them back on their feet. And I have every bit of confidence in Ms. Cannon that she's the right person for this job. I'm optimistic in 10 years we're going to see this as a revenue source for the state of Oregon, that she's going to turn it around that much. But I'm also concerned with the concern I'm hearing and almost the frustration I'm hearing with this. This is a valuable tool for the state. It's something we need to maintain for the whole good of the state. And so I'll get off my stump right now.
Thanks.
But let me tell you, no, I
don't. You're not going to get off just yet.
I serve 8 counties in the state, and I've called around to those 8 counties. And granted, all 8 of those could probably fit in just a portion of Portland. But those folks think that's a valuable tool, and they're willing to step up and do what they can. Granted, their level of participation may be a little less than folks would like, but every bit helps, and I think if there's something we ought to be subsidizing, it's our state fair.
Thank you.
I would say they already are stepping up because they pay their taxes in eastern Oregon as well as this side of the mountains. And I hope that you're right with your 10-year revenue projection. I was here 10 years ago at the same desk, same place, and a picture wasn't any prettier than it is today. And I would just tell you that I'm probably just as big a supporter of the county, of the state fair and county fairs as anybody in the world. It's suffered terribly from some management problems over the years. I will echo what Representative Ringo said and Senator Yee and others, and I've said before, there should be some contribution from hotel and motel tax. There should be some county contribution. There should be some city contribution. There should be some contributions from the Chamber of Commerce. When this is all gone someday, because there may be a panelist sitting here that is more tired of this problem than we are, we'll say goodbye. It's time to cut bait and run. And as our budgets tighten up, if we do go into tough economic times, the next time we're here, we may have to be making tough choices. If this fair is going to make it, I think it can make it under the direction of Katie Concannon. And I think we need to she deserves an opportunity to do that. But I wish that, and I appreciate what Robin said, but the budget note, in my opinion, isn't as strong as what we need. We need to see some contributions. Quite frankly, I'd have liked to have seen those commitments before we passed the budget. But I will vote on the budget knowing that I hope we set a record, made a record, and then they will set a record of contributions.
Thank you very
much. Keeping the state fair viable in Salem.
Excellent. Thank you, Senator Cornell. Representative Johnson's ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to amplify a point that's been abundantly made. But that's to make sure that we know that the community of the fair is not just Salem and Marion County. The community of the fair must include the county fairs. And I see Mr. Cully here. I hope the message goes back to the county fairs loud and clear that they need to step up and be full partners in the rescue of the state fair to the degree that they're able. And I don't think the value is always put on how many dollars they bring in, but how much they're standing around wringing their hands and how much they're looking as though they really want to see the fair succeed and come forward with ideas, volunteerism, and all of the values that I think people hold the aggregation of community around the fairs in great stead. I mean, it doesn't have to be that you pay a lot of money to do something, but you can certainly volunteer, and that's one of the hallmarks, I think, of county fair participation. So let that effort come through to the state fair as well, and I hope you'll be the messenger to carry that back to the county fairs.
Thank you, Representative Patridge.
Just one more thing to put on the record. You know, it's such an important thing to Marion County and the City of Salem, but nobody from Marion County or the City of Salem is here. My understanding is there's someone here from the VCB, but there is nobody here from the county or the city. And to me, that's a shame.
For what they, Mr. Chair, VCB?
Visitors and Convention Uh-oh. Bureau.
Thank you.
It's 20 for the pig today.
Visitors and Convention Bureau. I'm happy that they're here, but the city is not. There's nobody here from the city, and there's nobody here from the county. And I guess I hope that our our statements here don't ring hollow because they're not here. I hope that it's passed on because we've had them in front of us at least two sessions that I've been here.
Mr. Chair, the final record, assuming that Representative Rendell and Representative Smith and Representative Johnson and Senator Rich and all of us are back, I know, Senator, you won't get to because of term limits, but if we have a problem next
house,
year... Coming back in the House. If we have a problem like this next year, I'd be more than happy to submit an amendment to the budget bill that says we move the state fair to the Deschutes County Fairgrounds, and I guarantee you we'll have city people there and we'll have county.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I will make sure that the budget report reflects the stated concern of the committee. My concern is adding language like that to a budget note. It is something that the state has no ability to enforce, and therefore it is not appropriate to put that kind of language, that kind of expectation on the state fair itself. But I will make sure that the budget report language reflects the abiding desire of the committee to see significant contributions on the part of the city and the county.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say that the state fair, that it's able to produce enough revenue to stay afloat to cover its own operation costs and the program costs itself, but it probably never provide enough to meet major expansions, major other issues, not to meet the debt payments on the collapsing buildings out there. We've got one. Recognize, this is probably one of the last collapsible stadiums made in the United States. President Ringo?
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if Robin, if I could just work with you on crafting that budget note and maybe getting drafts around here just to kind of try to coordinate that.
Mr. Chair, I'm not recommending a budget note, but I would be happy to work with you on budget report language that stated the discussion of the committee and what their concern was.
I'm sorry, what is a budget report?
The budget report is basically the minutes of the meeting. It is a summary of the record of the discussions and actions that were taken in the subcommittee, and it's an official record. I can work with you on some language within that. You have copies of it whenever you get your.
I guess I'd like some thought from this committee. Is the best way to send a message to Marion County through a budget report or through a budget note or some other mechanism?
I think the budget note is a difficult issue because if we're trying to commit Marion County or the city of Salem,
right,
it would be very difficult, or to commit Katie that she would be able to do it. Now we've had the meetings in the ad hoc committee, and certainly there's some attempt and some effort. But we can't commit them at this point.
I understand.
Event, so.
But I'm asking, what is the strongest mechanism we have to send that message?
We could run Representative Williams' bill that if the city of Salem and Marion County don't come up, then the state fair is for sale. He's got a sale bill on the state fair.
Maybe it's a budget report. I was just asking.
Yeah, the budget report is probably the strongest thing that we have available to us. But there are other members of this assembly who feel that it already deserves the plug to be pulled, and while that's circulating, once it's circulated, then it could gain momentum. So it's imperative that we do the very best that we can. So with that, Robin, would you please take us through the last couple of paragraphs there to finish the budget up, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to move into the number recommendation part, and with your permission, if we could wait until item 9, and then we could have motions on 9, 10, and 11. I'm recommending approval of the revised current service level of $14,244,788 all funds and 56 positions and 37.74 FTE. The documentation is on page 3 of the spreadsheet. Just to note, the current service level budget was reduced by 1,101 general fund and 11,946 other funds for the reduced PERS, BAS, Attorney General, and Secretary of State Audit Assessments. Item 6, Recommending approval of the revised policy option package 106 that provides $829,356 in general fund operating subsidy and an adjustment of $184,478 other funds. Approve a technical adjustment in package 090 on page 7 that reduces 26,240 general fund and 0.07 FTE. And approve, this is item 8, approve the co-chair reduction of 6,477, which is 1% of general fund services and supplies. And with that, Mr. Chair, we need a motion to approve the agency budget of 56 positions and 37.67 FTE and 1,492,452 general funds, 2,244,212 lottery funds, 10,178,143 other funds, and 1,311,128 non-limited other funds.
Representative Johnson now moves the LFO recommendation. As stated, are there any objections? If not, so ordered.
Item 10, I'm recommending the following, I actually need a motion for the following amendments to House Bill 5017. In Section 1, delete $1,500,000 and insert 1,492,452. And I did attach a copy of that bill to the material that's clear at the back if you wanted to double check. In Section 3, delete 11501217 and insert 10173143. This adjustment includes removal of 1,311,128 in non-limited other funds and the reduction of 11,946 in assessments in the current service level.
Representative Smith now moves amendments to House Bill 5017 in accordance with the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations. Any objections? So moved.
Okay. And now, Mr. Chair, I need a motion to move HB 5017 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 5017 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? So ordered. Seeing none. And let's see. To the full Ways and Means and then to the House and Senate. It's the House bill, full Ways and Means. The Representative Johnson?
Yes, sir.
And to the House, Representative Johnson?
I would defer to Mr. County Fair, Representative
Smith.
Mr. County Fair.
Representative Smith to the full House.
Thank you.
And to the Senate, Senator Tarnell, or Senator Yee?
Senator Yee, would you like to do it?
Senator
Tarnell. One possible.
Senator Durfin.
He was on the committee. By golly, that's a great idea.
Senator Durfin,
I think we could have Senator Courtney, actually.
That's a great point.
Oh, that might be
that'd be Senator Courtney who came and spoke.
Is that okay with you, Senator Courtney?
Well, let's put Senator Courtney, if he has any objection, he can come back to us.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now close the hearing or the work session on House Bill 5017. Thank you very much.
Is that Maxim's or
Let's come back to Senate Bill 5545, the Department of Transportation. We'll continue on with a public hearing. We were on page 361, as I recall.
I'll go get a box. I want to go get a pig buck.
Yeah.
You
know, that's a better deal. Let me spot you for the pig buck here.
Yeah.
I didn't go that bit.
Take us just a minute.
A lot of those people were probably there. This is where they talk budget. But Jenny's been here a long time. You know, every morning. Yeah, one single. No. Yeah.